How do? You're about to listen to episode 27 of a podcast called The Movie Mixtape with Marcy and Dirk. This is our animation mixtape and it is our shared movie. So me and Marcy have picked this together and we have gone for the 2010 film How to Train Your Dragon from DreamWorks Animation, starring Jay Baruchel, Gerard Butler, and America Ferrera. So, if that is something you're into, why don't you sit back, relax, and enjoy the mix. Da, da, da. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 28 of the movie mixtape. How are you doing, Marcy? Hello.
I'm good. I have a question. Hello. was that the sloth from the Croods? Is that what you were doing?
What?
Doesn't this little sloth, the thing she wears is like a belt, doesn't...
No, it wasn't that.
That's the wrong DreamWorks movie, by the way, buddies.
The sloth, I love the sloth from the Croods. What's that film called? Dawn of the Croods or something, though.
I've only seen the first one, I haven't seen the second one.
Oh, the second one is very good, very good.
Okay.
But no, I was doing flipping Hiccup, wasn't I? Dead, dead, dead.
Oh,
we're dead.
Oh, we're dead. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Well, I get it.
I'm
glad the reference I made to the movie we're about to talk about flew over your head.
I'm glad that could be almost a lot of different movies, actually. But I am good. How are you doing?
I am high as a kite. Oh, your eyebrows then when I said that. Oh my goodness. They almost left the orbit of your face. You raised them so much.
Well, I thought just the high from Lord of the Rings is carrying over into this week, so I wasn't sure what was going on. But why are you high as the kite?
I'm high as the proverbial and literal kite. I just had a really good day. I had a really nice day. I had a good day today, Marcy. And did a bit of family stuff, and then we went to the theatre, didn't I? That we're recording this very late in the day for people who are interested
really
in that sort of information.
It's happening.
It's very late in my day, not late in Marcy's day, because something about time, something about the country, something about living in different countries means that for some reason, when I speak to Marcy, it's 5 hours in my past. I can't understand it. Somebody smarter than me will have to explain that another time. But it's very late here because I've been to the theatre and I've been to see The Book of Mormon. Have you seen it, Marcy?
I have never seen it. I don't know what it's about. I've never heard any of the music from it.
Okay, let me stop you right there and just say, keep it that way. Never listen to the music. Never investigate it further. I'm just gonna give you this. Okay. There have been times in my life when I've thought, oh, maybe I could write a movie. Maybe I could write a screenplay. Maybe I could write that comic story I've got in my head. And these ideas are good. These are really good ideas. And then you see something like The Book of Mormon and you realize all your ideas are junk because it is, and I'm going to say it, perfection. It is literal satirical perfection. And I probably spent, this is the second time I've seen it. Okay. So I saw it in London and then they've come to Liverpool. So we went to see them tour in Liverpool. I was crying the whole flipping time. And I cry the tears of somebody who is watching something that is so beautiful and immaculately created. And you just sat there going, who did this? Because you deserve every award in the world. It's satire, but not cynical satire. It's whimsical, okay. It's hopeful, it's fun, and it just makes me smile and feel good about myself and humanity watching it. So I would recommend the Book of Mormon to absolutely everyone. I mean, you've got to be able to take it on the chin that they're going to talk about religion, which I feel like, you know, you need to know that before you go in, because if that's not your bag, no problems, don't go and see it. But if you're okay with satire about religion, then go for it. And I grew up as I grew up as a very religious person, and I'm okay with it. So hopefully the people are okay with it too.
I'm just laughing because I know so many people that are not okay with things like that. I don't know. Are you familiar with the author Christopher Moore?
No.
At all? Have you? No. Okay. I think you might like him because he does a lot of sci-fi stuff, but he wrote a book once called Lamb, and it's about Jesus's best friend, Biff, growing up that none of us have ever heard about because he's not in the Bible. And it's a really good, funny book, and it's a really good book about friendship, and I really love it. But, you know, I know a lot of religious people that want to see that book burn.
I think, gosh, I feel that's really sad. Like, if you believe something, somebody telling a story that's kind of about it doesn't affect your belief about it. You know, like, it's a satire about religion, the Book of Mormon, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it does poke fun at organized religion in many ways, but it also does generate a feeling of hope and what people can do together and work together. And it doesn't matter necessarily what you believe or who you believe, but it's okay to believe and it's okay to not believe. So great. You know, it's inclusive. And I just think, I'm not preaching about it. The Book of Mormon. If you can watch it, Marcy, I really think you'd be into it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to just be honest here. I love musicals.
Yes!
I do love musicals, but wait, like the movie kind. I am not very big on theater acting. It can get on my nerves, but I have seen a couple really good things. And one thing that's coming actually next month here that I'm really excited about, I haven't heard any of the music, I'm trying not to, but it's called Hadestown, and it's about like a retelling of the Greek myths, and obviously it takes place in the underworld, it's called Hadestown. So I really want to go check that out, but it has to have something that interests me. Or it kind of has to blow up to the point of Hamilton where I'm like, okay, fine, I'll check this out because everybody has told me about Hamilton. Fine, I will be the last person on earth to watch Hamilton. And then I really did like Hamilton. So it takes me a while.
Okay, but one
for theater musicals.
One, I'm interested in Hadestown. That sounds good. And it sounds right up your street. And two, Book of Mormon's better than Hamilton.
I thought you were going to say better than Hadestown, and I was like, have you even seen Hadestown?
No, I have seen Hamilton, and I've seen Book of Mormon, obviously, and I think it's tough because they're both very good. Book of Mormon win.
Yeah, Book of Mormon definitely blew up, and I remember when it blew up, and it still wasn't enough to be like, okay, and it's been through here a couple times, but I've never really gone. I don't know why we don't go to more things. Like, so actually Dan's mom, I think she might not be anymore since COVID happened, but she was like a member. We call it our cultural trust group, and that's where all the musicals and shows come through. And you like join it and you get like 6 shows, and then you can add a couple extra or whatever for whatever the season is. And whenever she couldn't go to one thing or the other, like Dan and I would be like the ones to just be like, yeah, sure, whatever. And one thing that really surprised me, I will be so shocked if you know what either of these things are. So there is a movie from the 50s called An American in Paris. Do you know that movie?
Nope.
Okay. So it won Best Picture, and Gene Kelly's in it. And it's like it's like one of the first Technicolor musicals. Mm. I mean, I'm not counting Wizard of Oz here. It's very vibrant. It's a really beautiful movie. Well, they made that into a theater musical, and some of it's different. But I enjoyed it, but I really love the movie, so that's why I was okay with going to see that. But yeah, I don't know why we don't go more often. Frozen's coming here in a little bit, but I'm so sorry, God, I'm really digging myself a hole here. I'm not big on Frozen either, so I don't know if I want to go see that.
But equally, there's so many original productions that you could see. Why would you see Frozen? Mm-hmm. I mean, I would go and see Frozen because, you know me, I'm a Frozen fanatic. Mm-hmm. Yep, in this household, yeah, we are big on Frozen, so I would see that. But I would say, yeah, if you are not, if you're going to go to see one thing in a year at the theatre, don't go and see Frozen. Why would you? What, okay, would you?
Then I will stop talking about the times I've gone to see the other Disney musicals. But Aladdin is a really good, like, theater musical, because they added a bunch of new songs to it. And our dear friend Alan Menken that we were talking about,
my dear friend,
not too long ago, wrote a bunch of new songs for that. And that, actually, I really, really liked. But that's what I would do for a while. Like, oh, I like this Disney musical. That's
well,
my one year.
It made me think of the mixtape, because when we were there queuing up to get inside, in a few weeks, they've got the Little Shop of Horrors on. And then a month, they've got Strictly Ballroom, the musical of Strictly Ballroom.
Oh, wow.
Bingo, bingo.
Okay. I think I did know Strictly Ballroom was a musical. I think that might... I can't remember if that's come here.
Well, I will say the Book of Mormon is not... I would say it's not that kind of theatrical musical.
Okay.
I could see it as a movie, albeit, you know, I don't know, a Little Shop of Horrors-esque. You know, it's not going to be super cinematic, I suppose, because of, you know, the limited locations. But it's maybe the most perfect thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And I say maybe.
Okay.
I say maybe.
Because you know what we're going to talk
about. Because we know
about
what we're
going to
talk about. Yeah, because I know what we're going to talk about shortly. Wait. And also, okay. All right. Uh-huh. Before we go on, after I've done all that blabbing, so yeah, we're going to talk about our shared movie for this mixtape, the animation mixtape. We're going to do How to Train Your Dragon. I just say it right now so people know what we're talking about. We're going to talk about How to Train Your Dragon, the DreamWorks animation film from what, 2010?
2010.
And it's a shared movie, so we've picked this together. So that means that, unlike my pick for Marcy or Marcy's pick for me, we've both watched this already and we both love it. So that, spoilers, that'll give you a clue as to how we feel about this movie. But yeah, how are you doing anyway?
Oh, I'm good. So I'll get a little bit more into how my week has been, but everything's been busy. I was gone the last couple of days. And so when I talk about my first watch of this movie and my most recent watch of this movie, it'll be pretty funny because, let's just say, scrambling is the word I would use to try to get this watch in today. But I am very excited because this movie just, I don't know, it makes me really happy. And I really love this movie. I know, like, spoilers, we already said it, but that's why we picked it. But other than, like, being extremely busy, I don't know. Like, I don't even know what day it is. Like, yesterday I was like, yeah, it's Saturday. And then Dan kept going, it's Friday. And I was like, okay. So I've completely lost track of days.
Yeah, when you said that, I had to check myself because I thought today was Saturday.
Well, it is still for me, not for you anymore.
No, not for me anymore. That'll give you a clue when we're recording this and my commitment to the cause.
I can't believe this is happening today.
I'm going to put my cards on the table and say something to you right now, to your face. I've never been more excited to talk about a movie with you than I am about How to Train Your Dragon right now.
I just got chills. I'm not even kidding. No, I'm being serious. Like, I'm like, oh, really? Because I really love this movie. Mm-hmm. So, oh, wow. Okay, I think I knew you liked it. I don't think we've ever really talked about it in depth before, which is great because here we are, so now we get to do it. So that all worked out.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be one of the things to talk about in a way, in a roundabout way, that we've never talked about it. I'm not making sense, but it will make sense later. Maybe.
I think maybe just one time. I think Mikey P watched this and logged it on Letterboxd, gave it 5 stars, and I was like, hallelujah, like, we can still be friends with Mikey P. And then I think that's when I first found out you really liked it, too. So.
Mm-hmm.
Just one of those things. But I'm very excited to get into this if you'd like to. Unless if you have any other cool theater musicals you've seen recently.
No. I think just to elaborate on something from last week, I've continued on my Strange New World journey, the Star Trek TV show.
Yeah.
If we're talking about perfect things, that is as close to perfect as I think a Star Trek TV show can get. I was watching it last night and I was giggling away to myself, just giggling away on my chair. Everybody else was in bed and I was sat there just giggling and rocking back and forth, just watching it. And
it, those are the best moments.
And it's got your boy's grandkid in it, Gregory Peck's grandkid's yeah, in it, and he is very good. It takes a lot. Do you know what? It takes a lot for me to like a Spock. I don't think he's the most likable character. He's so good in this. So good. Yeah. And I think
I just was thinking of Zach. I really thought Zachary Quinto was a good Spock. Mm-hmm. I really, really did. So, and he's from Pittsburgh, so why I wanted to mention it really quick.
But I think sometimes it can be difficult to warm to a Spock. Yeah. And I really warm to the Spock in Strange New Worlds. Contained so far. It may have my favorite new character in all of Star Trek, Lieutenant Noonien Singh, who is very good. You know how like Star Trek starts out with these characters who are a little bit not Starfleet? So for people who don't watch Star Trek, what that means is they're not, you know, they don't go by the book. They're not prim and proper. And so she's kind of like that, but she goes especially by the book. And I just hope they don't water her down. I hope, you know, it's one of those Star Trek things whereby it'll get to season two and she's just like everyone else. But right now, I love Lieutenant Noonien Singh. She's so good. She's so good.
This is going to be so funny, but I still need to watch that. But I saw something the other day that made me think of you. But it said, like, I'm pretty sure 99% of all adult conversations are someone bringing up a show to you and you being like, yeah, I've been meaning to start that. But no, that I do really want to watch it. I like the original Star Trek, but Next Generation's really my favorite thing. But then when those J.J. Abrams movies came out, they were really like, oh, this is so fun and exciting. And I think it made a better connection for the original characters, to me at least, than like the original show. But I would really like to check that out. Can I mention a show that I watched a couple weeks ago, but I'm actually rewatching it now because I really liked it so much. A lot of people over here have watched it. I don't know if it's over in your country yet, but have you heard of a show called The Bear?
No.
Okay. So I kept hearing really good things about it, and I finally just decided to watch it. And it is about a guy in Chicago. His brother has recently killed himself, and his brother leaves his like really crappy rundown restaurant for him to take care of. But this guy is like a Michelin star chef. He's like one of the best chefs in the country, but he gives it all up to go save his brother's like dying restaurant because his brother left it to him. So it's a really sometimes stressful show, especially if you've ever worked in the restaurant industry and you know what those days are like, even in this like little crappy like sandwich shop. But it's really good. And then I love watching people cook. So there's scenes of people like making things, and it's not like, you know, it's not like a straight up cooking show, but I've really been enjoying it. But the thing I've really liked is the main actor. His name's Jeremy Allen White. I can't explain it. I just immediately was like, this guy is fantastic and I want him in more things. And then I recently heard the other week, one of my nerd podcasts that I listen to, they were picking like new people to play Marvel heroes that we like really know well, like Wolverine and stuff like that. So actually somebody said, why not have Jeremy Allen White play Logan Wolverine? And ever since then I was like, I want it. Where do I sign? How do I get him to be? Because actually I think he would be perfect. It's not a Logan-esque character that he plays on the show, but I think he could really, really do it. So The Bear, if you like really good shows with somewhat good feelings, but also anxiety inducing at times.
Okay.
It's only like about 7 or 8 episodes this first season, and episodes are like about a half hour. I think I binged the first season in 2 nights, and then I was like, oh, Dan, you should watch this. Because he used to be, actually, so funny story. I was a waitress, and Dan was a chef at a restaurant, and that's how we met. So I was like, you should watch this show and have PTSD. So he started it, and I'm watching it again with him, but he seems to like it. So
where does that appear in America? What TV channel?
It's on Hulu.
So it might come on Disney Plus over here then, because we get the Hulu shows on Disney.
I will say Hulu has just been on fire recently. They are releasing a lot of things just straight to Hulu. I'm pretty sure that might have been one of them. Under the Banner of Heaven, which was Andrew Garfield's show.
Yeah, that's on Disney recently. Plus over here. I saw
it's
that.
Really
yeah,
good.
Advertised.
And that's actually all about the Mormon religion, if you coming full circle. So he's really, I mean, we know how I feel about Andrew Garfield. If you just want to see somebody like act the table off of everybody else, watch that. It's really dark though. And then what else? Oh, I fell asleep during it last night, not because it was bad or anything, just because I was exhausted from a very long day. But we started Prey, which is the Predator prequel. It's really good. It's really, really good. I just was exhausted, and so I have like a half hour left. I'm going to finish it tonight, and I'm really excited.
So is that on Hulu over there?
That's all on Hulu, so but it's all owned by Disney.
Yeah,
but
that's Disney
Hulu's
Plus over
like,
here.
It's like the adult Disney Plus here.
So I think basically we just get Hulu built into our Disney Plus over here. So that's jokes funny. On you, America. We save pure money there, fuel and our petrol, which is about twice the price of what it is in your country.
I get Hulu for free, so I'm not complaining about it.
Oh, Kate Winslet gets the Hulu for free.
So fancy. God, I wish I was Kate Winslet. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, thank you for letting me talk about The Bear. I think you might enjoy it. It's really good acting. What is my favorite thing about The Bear, though? And it's maybe because I don't know any of the actors in it. There's like one or two. Actually, I lied. There's about three people I did know beforehand that have smaller roles in it that show up every once in a while. They just all feel like real people. Mm-mm. And I love shows. Like, I mean, they just feel like real people. It feels like nobody is acting. Like, that's the best kind of show. Where you're like, this is really happening, right?
You know, I was already in when you told me there was going to be footage of somebody making sandwiches. So, I mean, I'm really into sandwiches. I mean, that's a big part of my life. And especially if somebody makes a sandwich and they put it on a grill or a griddle. Mm-hmm. I'm here for that. So I'm excited to check this out, if nothing else.
But yeah, Bear, please check it out, everybody. It's a really short show, too. You can get through it, like, in a couple nights if you have no if you have no life like me, I guess, is what I would just say.
Well, sadly, Marcy, I have a life, so it'll probably take me a bit longer, but I am going to look that one up, so thanks for that.
All right, anyways, that's The Bear. That's Jeremy Allen White. Really excited to see what you think of all that, but let's get back onto the rails here. I'm so sorry, everybody.
Don't apologize for having a normal conversation with me. Thanks very much. Thanks for making me feel like you can't talk to me without having to apologize to someone. Anyway, How to Train Your Dragon. That is the movie we're talking about in our animation mixtape, our shared movie. I have done a synopsis. Would you like me to read it? Yes, I say read it. I'm not reading it. I've shattered the illusion again. I'm not reading this. This is just off the top of my head. Okay?
Okay. Good luck.
Okay, How to Train Dragon. Hey! Hiccup here. Dads! Am I right? Always making you do stuff. Like tidy your room, work for the local ironmonger, and learn to hunt and kill dragons despite it being abhorrent to your very nature. So anywho, we're Vikings. You know the guys what wear those cute hats like what Boromir did in Lord of the Rings. We live on an island called Burke, but it's not all bad plumbing and sun cream. Oh no, we have dragons. They come and destroy our homes and steal our livestock. My dad is the Viking chief and he pure hates dragons, like for real. And I don't know, I guess I wanted to impress him one time and make him proud, so I kind of accidentally on purpose caught one. Only problem is, dragons don't seem to be what we think they are. If anything, this dragon is just like me. But, and I say again, dads, am I right? My dad won't stop until all dragons are destroyed, and I can't let anything happen to my new friend Toothless. So what happens next? All I know is I can train this dragon, and perhaps the real me will be enough. How to Train Dragon.
So I just really quick remembered what next week is, and I was like, Jesus Christ, are we going to do this again next week?
Well, yet again... we have selected a movie with a problematic relationship between a father and a son. Flipping heck. I mean, do we have a type? Do we have a type? I mean, if we were on Tinder, I think we would have a type.
If in your bio it says has a complicated relationship with your father, you swear yeah. it.
Oh, it just made me real. It just made me think back when I saw Phoebe Bridges last week. Just before she played Kyoto, she went, "Who here has a complicated relationship with their father?" It's like the movie Mixtape does. Flipping it every single week. Every single week, it feels like. So
oh, wow.
that Amazing. Is my synopsis for How to Train Your Dragon, Wonderful. And we picked this together. How are you feeling?
Okay, so I want to start off with something about this movie, and I want to start off with the magic of low to no expectations when you go into a movie. So, as we know, this is a DreamWorks picture. There are some decent DreamWorks movies. Prince of Egypt comes to mind.
Chicken Run.
That's about it. Chicken Run. Chicken Run. Yes, Chicken Run. Of course, Chicken Run. And then it just quickly goes off a cliff after that. This actually ties into my first time watching this. So I remember this coming out. I think it came out like around March 2010. And I was away at college. And it was really hard to see new movies when I was away at college because the closest movie theater was like about 30, 40 minutes. And I had a car, but, you know, it just was hard to get away for that. But I remember seeing the trailers for this and being like, oh, dear God, here they go again. Like, this is so rough looking. Holy crap. And then let's fast forward to the summer of 2010. I was living with my then boyfriend. He was a little bit older than me. I was only 20 at the time. So Whoa. He was going out to get drinks with a friend. And I had started this. I think it had just come on HBO. And I said, you know what? I'll just watch it. So he was leaving. He's like, you good? I was like, yeah, I'm going to watch this movie. He's like, okay, I won't be that long or whatever. The movie ends. I immediately started over because I was so blown away by this movie. He comes home and he's like, there is no way this movie is that long. Did you start it over? And I said, yes, I did. So I've loved this movie. As soon as it starts, we'll get into why and like what is so special about this movie. But I think sometimes the movies that I end up loving the most are the ones that I have like low or no expectations for. And this was definitely one of those. And I'm so happy I was wrong about it. But then kind of fast forwarding to today. So I do own this movie. As I was saying, I was busy the last couple of days, but I had to watch this today. And my mom came over today and we were doing things. And then I knew I had some more time until you could come on to do this. So I was like, oh, I got time. And then it was getting so close. And then, you know, what's really fun is when you're still not all the way unpacked in your new house and it takes a half hour to find a Blu-ray disc. And I was like, for the love of God, I am not renting this movie. So it took a while, but Mochi watched it with me. I was telling you about that earlier. And we just had a really nice time. And it's been a while since I've watched the first one. So I just had a really nice time watching this. But what about you? What are your thoughts on the low?
No, well, yeah, can I pick up on a few of those points? Because totally low to no expectations. This film is called How to Train Your Dragon. Immediately, I'm like, this is not going to be good. Automatically. And then it's a DreamWorks production. And, you know, there's a level. And I remember I was watching, I was watching a kind of an animator's thing on the DVD last night. And the guys were talking like, yeah, so this is a DreamWorks production. So we've got to push the envelope. And I was going, mate, I don't think that's what DreamWorks do. I am not sure that DreamWorks is known for pushing the envelope. So my expectations were not high. And I think as well, mixed into that, since watching it the first time, and I really loved it. But since then, it has been swallowed and engulfed by the multiple series that are on Netflix that we have over here, the many sequels, which, you know, are all enjoyable. None of these are not enjoyable, but I kind of lose in the mist what happens in where. Like, I can't sort of accurately tell you this happens in that film or this was a TV episode. And a lot of the TV episodes are centered around the gang of the kids, I guess, whereas this movie is much more about Hiccup and Astrid rather than...
Everyone
else. Yeah, Snotlow and whatever, the Rough Nut. Yeah, you know, and all those other ancillary characters. So, yeah, definitely low expectations or okay expectations going into this. But then what happened was last night I said, right, well, I have to watch this movie because we've picked it, you know, to watch it together. And I do like it. I remember liking it. Would you want to watch it all together to my wife, my daughter, Betsy? So we said, yeah, sat down. All watched it together, and I am just immediately reminded of the absolute magic that is contained in this film. And I find myself crying. I find myself absolutely laughing with 100% authenticity throughout this film. It is hilarious. It is heartfelt. It is. We did Princess Mononoke last week, and we talked about how there are moments in the Miyazaki films where it slows down and people are allowed to breathe, and we have that in this film. And I just don't think you see that very often in a DreamWorks animation, that type of thing.
Absolutely.
And
not.
I think that was my overriding memory of the first time I watched it, was probably the sequences when it slowed down, and I went, they're really letting that simmer. And when I watched it again last night, and my daughter is laughing, she is creased up laughing at various moments, and she's holding her breath, and I can tell she's holding her breath during various different scenes, and I am too.
Yeah.
And all the emotional beats that got me the first time got me even harder last night, and I had this epiphany that this film is a masterpiece. It is an absolute masterpiece. And why are we not talking about it more often?
Gosh.
Because it is a Van Gogh, mate. This is what you want your animated movies to be, full stop.
I think I just was in so much shock that, like, so much care and thought was put into a DreamWorks movie when I first saw it. But like you said, there's just moments where you have time to, like, just take in everything happening. But what I really enjoy and what I think makes this movie so special is there's so much world building. Mm-hmm. Like, this is an island that's not real. These are Vikings, which is really cool because then the women get to do a lot too. You know, it's not just a boys' story. It's for girls and boys. And it's got a lot of adult themes in it, especially the father-son relationship, which gets me. So I have, like, this weird theory. So I love movie scores, and I think this is in my top three of movie scores of all time. So John Powell did this, and I have this theory. So horror movies and animated movies are probably the two genres that are least taken seriously, but the movies in those categories that are held with the highest esteem have some of the best scores. Have you ever noticed that?
Well, like, I can hear it now when you say it. Yeah.
Or if you look at horror movies, like we were just talking about Alien, The Thing,
Halloween.
We're talking about Halloween, you know, Silence of the Lambs. Like, it's kind of like crazy just how I think about it forefront, but there's a lot of people, I'm bringing you over here, but you were one of those people that, like, didn't really catch scores at first, but they are glue for these stories. And my two favorite songs in this movie, like, I cry both times they happen. And the first, it's called Test Drive, and it's the first time Hiccup goes out flying with Toothless. And there's a lot of dramatic moments in it, but then it's, like, overall really beautiful. And then my other favorite, and actually, I'll go back a little bit to Test Drive is, like, the main theme of How to Train Your Dragon, I would say. You hear it a couple more times throughout the movie. But then the other one I really love is when he first takes Astrid out. And it's called Romantic Flight. And those are both very, very good. And this was John Powell's first Oscar nomination. So he actually got nominated for Best Score for this movie. And I think that just shows, like, how seriously people take How to Train Your Dragon. Like, because It was the only movie that year nominated for Best Score that wasn't nominated also for Best Picture. Oh, wow. So it was nominated for Best Animated Feature and Best Score. But the big animated movie that year that got nominated for Best Picture was Toy Story 3, unfortunately. So I love Toy Story 3, don't get me wrong, but I think How to Train Your Dragon's a way better movie.
Genuinely way better. I mean, I've been doing my work on the score, but it's not even hard with this film. It's not like you have to try with this film. You just hear it and it uplifts you. And I wrote down the test drive one and the Astrid. And so Hiccup is the main Viking. Toothless is the dragon that he fells and then kind of helps to fly again because he knocked off his little rudder wing. And that's part of the story. And test drive kicks in when Hiccup is a bit of an inventor and he figures out how to put his tiny little rudder wing back on. And it's beautiful. But it's not just beautiful. It's tense as well. Captured in that scene, there is a bit where, you know, they're flying together for the first time. It's not perfect. There are mistakes made and Hiccup falls off and he falls off and he falls off and he is falling off from a very high height. And the dramatic tension in that score, you know, it's not even halfway through the movie. So your logical brain is saying, there's no way the lead character is dying in this moment. Come on, I'm a very old man. I know that's not happening. But the score makes you question it. And you are going, is he? But the other one I wrote down was the one that's called Forbidden Friendship, which is, there's, Hiccup the Viking we're talking about and Toothless the dragon, it's their moment when they connect the first time. So Hiccup feels bad about Toothless being felled and being captured. He's trapped in this little valley and he can't get out because he can't fly. So he goes down and tries to feed him some fish and tries to help him out. And that whole kind of 5 minutes of them getting to know each other, and the animation on Toothless, which is some of the best. I think Disney, they make decisions and they animate their characters as dogs. But what do they animate Toothless as, Marcy? What do they animate?
He is 100% a cat.
He is.
That is what Toothless is.
Toothless is a cat. No questions asked. And the way they animate Toothless and the way they animate Hiccup and his mannerisms is perfect to his voice, perfect to his voice acting. And the score in that is called Forbidden Friendship, like I said, and it's like full of chimes, full of beautiful little melodies, and it's so good. It's so good because it's not like there's loads of conversation in that 5 minutes because it's a boy with a dragon. The dragon's not saying anything, but yet the score tells the story. It's so good.
And I just love, like, even the little subtle things Hiccup does in that moment. So there's a point where he's drawing Toothless in the sand with a stick, and Toothless gets curious like a cat. Like, Toothless is a cat. I don't care what anybody
says. Oh, he's a cat.
It's like his man.
He's a cat.
He really is. But he comes over and he's just right by him, and Hiccup knows he's right there, but instead of freaking out, he just kind of goes, oh, oh, and then, like, to himself, and then keeps drawing, and then Toothless does his drawing. There's, like, even a scene where Toothless is rolling around in, like, catnip grass, and he gets all, like that high. Like, it's so funny because we were just talking about catnip. And then the big thing with Toothless that you can tell he's a cat is his pupils go from, like, those, like, thin slits to, like, huge, big, black. And that's what happens with a cat, especially when they're excited or they want to know what's going on with something. And that's exactly what happens with his face. Anytime he wants to know what's going on or he's very excited about something, and Toothless, like, I think that's why I just immediately loved Toothless, because I've always loved cats, and I was like, this is like the, it did really feel like this is the first time somebody, like, represented a cat so well in a movie. You know, most of the time cats are maybe the villain. I'm thinking of Cinderella there, or they're just kind of like a minor character. It's always the dog that's like the loyal sidekick, but Toothless is like the best cat in my opinion.
I mean, there's no debate now. He's 100% a cat. I mean, that is a fact. He is. So, I mean, I'm with you on the score. It filled my heart. It swelled my soul. I was like the Grinch, you know, my heart grew three sizes, and not through hypertension, through love. of this movie. Well, what else? What else?
Can I add something funny? Mm-hmm. Not funny. I think this is really cool. So after this movie came out, they're actually over in this country in animal shelters, which I love this. So as we know, black cats are considered bad luck. That's a superstition. Dragons in this movie are considered bad, not good things. But what was nice was after this movie came out, there was like an uptick in black cat adoptions, and people were naming it Toothless. So I think that's wonderful. And I just love that, like, that's the association the people of Berg have with dragons, and this a lot of people, for some stupid reason, have with black cats over here. So I thought that was a really fun, cool thing to me. I guess, I don't know, there's so many things I want to talk about, but I don't know if we should get into the big father
son
relationship. Okay, yeah. Well, you were kind of getting into voice acting, so Jay Baruchel,
I can't say his name.
I've heard some people complain about his voice. I actually really love him as Hiccup. And one of my favorite things about this movie is I think the voice casting is perfect, even though it always cracks me up that all the adults are Scottish and all the kids are American.
One thing I was going to say, and this is not a criticism, this is an observation. Do American people think Vikings were Scottish or what?
No, we know that.
Because I was all loads of people in this Scottish and then load of bagpipes in it as well.
I mean, all right, let me just say, okay, let me reframe. I know that. I know that they weren't. There are probably some people over here that might think that. So I will just backtrack that up. I'm sure we'll get an email from Tim saying, actually, Mercy, I know several people that think they're Scottish. So they definitely invaded Scotland, that's for sure. But no, they're Nordic people. Like, that's what Vikings are. But I love Vikings, so that's also the other cool thing about this. But for people that normally are just in, like, okay things, doing whatever. Like, Gerard Butler to me is just an okay actor. But I absolutely love him as Stoic Hiccup's dad. But what I really love is Craig Ferguson. Is it Gobber?
Gobber, yeah.
So good. And then just all the kids. And I think actually my favorite is America Ferrera as Astrid. I love that. McLovin, I'm so sorry, I can't think of his
Christopher
name.
Christopher Mintz.
He's McLovin. I'm sorry, he's McLovin. But I love America as Astrid, and Astrid's so cool. I mean, this kind of reminds me so much of Princess Mononoke, where there are similar messages where it's like, the thing you shouldn't be afraid of the thing you don't understand. But also, like, Astrid is like San in a way, and Hiccup, in his own little unusual way, he's kind of like the middleman, like Ashitaka. So it's not verbatim like the same, but there are some similarities between the two. So I'd say more Astrid and Son than Ashitaka.
Well, I mean, sure. Astrid is by far and away my daughter's favorite character.
She's so cool.
She is flipping awesome, isn't she? So Astrid is a very competent Viking. Yeah, so we have a little bit of the film where the kids, if you like, so Hiccup, Astrid, and all the others we mentioned, are being trained to become dragon catchers, slayers, or whatever. And she is very competent. And my daughter absolutely loves a competent female character in a film, definitely. I think, do you know Craig Ferguson as a talk show host, right? Is that what you know him as? Or?
So the first thing I had ever seen Craig Ferguson in... Did you ever get the Drew Carey show?
Well, I was going to say he's a comedian. So, like, he was in, like, sketch shows over here and stuff like that. Yeah.
So, the thing that I first knew him from was he played Drew Carey's boss on the Drew Carey show. And then he got his talk show, like, years later. I knew him always as, like, a comedic actor. And then I did enjoy his talk show. I do like Craig Ferguson a lot. And I really enjoy him in this movie, for sure.
Well, should we talk about the movie mixtape favorite topic of father-son relationship?
Yeah, go ahead.
So we've got a classic here. We've got an absolute bona fide classic. We don't have a mum. Mum's not around, okay? Yeah. Don't worry about that for now. That'll come later, all right? But we've got Dad Stoic. He's a proper Viking fella. You know, he loves going around, killing dragons, shouting a lot, has a massive beard. wears a huge horned hat. Stoic, that's his name, he's the dad. Hiccup, he's the son. And he is a thin, smaller type of person. And I think what I really love about their relationship is we have an acknowledgement from the dad, I think, that he understands why there's a difficulty in their relationship, in that the dad always knew who he was. The dad said, you know, there's a description, Stoic talks to his mate, what's his name, Kubra, like we were saying, or whatever, about how about how he always knew who he was. From the moment he headbutted a rock and it split in two, he knew what a Viking could be, and he knew that was him. Whereas he feels that his son doesn't know who he is, and he can't connect with his son in a way, partly because his son's not like him, but also partly because I think he recognizes that his son doesn't know who he is in a way. I think that's something that I get from the beginning of the movie. It feels like he wants to be a good dad. It feels like he wants to be there for his son. But you're living in a world where actions speak louder than intentions, and they're Vikings. They have to do certain things. And so as a consequence of having to do certain things, when Hiccup can't do them, he, you know, obviously, you know, in a way lets his dad down. And so there's an inevitability about the fact that we're going to get at some point, we're going to get that trope conversation of, you're not my son, I thought you were better than this, mm-hmm. which we do get, but it's way, way, way more than it's written down on that piece of paper, I think. What do you think about that? Before I go on, what do you think?
So one really nice message, it does tie into this relationship, but one message I really like in this movie is be yourself, and, you know, don't just do what you expect others want from you. So Hiccup in the beginning is trying to capture a dragon or kill a dragon to, I think, mostly just prove to his dad and everyone else, because he doesn't fit in with the other kids either, that he can be like everyone else. But they all keep trying to keep him in with Gobber and be the apprentice, build the machines, because he's book smart and he's really nerdy and he's not like anyone else that lives there. But I think he just wants to fit in with everybody instead of just being who he is. And that really ties in with his dad. You know, we get Hiccup first meeting Toothless and he can't kill him. You know, he sets him free, and that's kind of where their bond. Toothless doesn't kill him, which, they say, dragons will always kill if they get the chance, and he doesn't. And he comes home, and he's like, well, I don't want to do anything with dragons anymore. He realizes it's not for him, and that's when his dad's like, you're going to start dragon training. And he's like, oh, crap. But he goes along with it because I think still a part of him is like, all right, I want to prove to my dad that I can do this. So he starts learning cool things from Toothless about how you can train dragons. Sorry, the title. And how you can, soothe them or keep them in bay, or I don't know what the terminology is. But, and then his dad, you know, his dad's away for a little bit because they're looking for this big nest of dragons. And his dad is so proud of him. But, I really like the moment when his dad comes home. And even though, he's finally doing what he thought his dad wanted from him, they still have that awkward conversation. It's still not smooth. It's maybe because Hiccup isn't being true to himself still, and maybe his dad kind of knows that a little bit, that it's still really awkward for them to just sit down and have a conversation about even that. Yeah.
There's two big beats in what you were talking about for me. One, Hiccup wants his dad to be proud of him. For his dad to be proud of him, he needs to kill a dragon. So that's why he tries to capture a dragon in the beginning. And then when he does, and he has the opportunity to kill the dragon, he chooses not to. And so in that moment, we as the audience know who Hiccup is. And it's the battle then for Hiccup to come to the realization that that is who he is. And that, and to be comfortable in that, and to be comfortable enough to present that to his father, which takes a bit of time. But there is a moment later on, the one I sort of was saying before, where it looks like Hiccup is going to be a dragon slayer. Because as you said, he's learned these little tricks, like how to scratch a dragon in the right place to send them to sleep, or that they're afraid of eels or something. So he's learned enough tricks to trick people into thinking he's this kind of almighty dragon master. But then when it becomes apparent that he's not going to kill the dragon, and stoic, his father is disappointed, and he does the big expected, you know, you're not my son, you know, kind of speech, and then he walks out of the room. That's not all we get. We get a stop, and we get a moment where the dad takes a breath, and you can see he's upset with himself for having said that, and he has to kind of shake it off because he knows there's more important things where he has to kind of deal with stuff in the village. But it's what I was saying at the beginning. There are moments when it slows down and you get the emotional impact that the choices these people make has on themselves. And I think that's a really mm-hmm. big deal, where they have that argument that you expect that's coming. But what you don't expect from a DreamWorks animation called How to Train Your Dragon is that there is an emotional consequence that is not just immediately rectified and is genuine.
Mm-hmm. And I love the whole movie because you see how similar Toothless and Hiccup are. But in that moment, you kind of see that his dad is similar to Hiccup, where his dad feels like there are expectations of the village and where he mm-hmm. lives. And because he's the leader also. So he feels like he can't just let his son be himself. His son has to be like everyone else. And that's the expectation of everyone else. So in that moment, that's when, you know, he says he's disappointed in his son or whatever. But jumping a little bit further ahead, so Stoic takes Toothless as a navigator, because all the dragons, they're kind of like bees, where they can find the hive, the main nest of where this huge, mean, villainous dragon is that actually eats other dragons if it's not getting enough food. And he's going to take all the adult Vikings and destroy the nest, and then all their dragon problems are going to go away. And he's not listening to Hiccup, you know, that, you know, the dragons aren't the enemies. There is a dragon that's the enemy, but it's not these ones. They kind of get in over their heads. They blow open the nest and the big one comes out. And then all the kids from Burke show up on the dragons that they had stowed away for the training use. And when his dad sees him on one flying and realizes, like, oh my gosh, you know, like, yeah, there's something here. I love the moment. I think it's so important to see parents apologize to their children. Mm-hmm. And when Hiccup, well, it's really sweet. I think it's after, like, you know, is it right before Stoic saves? I can't remember
I think it's after he saves. Well, I mean, it's either one, or is it? It's just before or just after.
Yeah. But he, you know, Hiccup is going to go take care of this big dragon with Toothless. And his dad just looks at him. He's like, I'm sorry. Like, you were absolutely right, and I'm proud of you. And it's like this just, and it makes me cry, because I think it is really, like, parents and adults mess up all the mm-hmm. time, but it is harder for them to, I think, apologize sometimes to their children. I don't know. I'm not there yet.
I love that. That is real life, because I mean, we make a real effort to apologize, you know, when we feel mm-hmm. like it's necessary, because God, I can't remember being apologized to as a kid when I was a kid. And that's no shade on my parents, but that's just, I want my child to know that there's nothing wrong with apologizing when you feel mm-hmm. you've done something that, I don't know, has hurt somebody, or, you know, you misjudge somebody. And it's really important that there's a culture of apologizing. And there is that, you know, we work hard for that in our family, and that really struck home with me, that moment. Like, it wasn't a throwaway I'm sorry, it was a genuine I'm really sorry. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just the words, it was the actions. And I think the fact that the two were coupled together are really important, because it's not just what we say, it's what we do, isn't it? And mm-hmm. the fact that Stoic, the dad, took Hiccup, so Hiccup was trying to save Toothless, who was drowning underwater, but Hiccup couldn't do it. He's not strong enough. So he took Stoic, his dad, pulled him out and rescued him. But that wasn't the end of it. He then went back in and rescued Toothless. And so it's the actions of that cement the apology as being real. And that is perfect. That is a real moment. That cements that as not just lip service. That's not just, oh, yeah, I'm sorry about that, just carry on with your life. That is, I was wrong.
And then I even think what follows after that is him like, he's saying he is proud of Hiccup and he believes in Hiccup finally is true, because after that, he lets Hiccup go and fight the big dragon. He doesn't say, like, oh, I'll help you because I don't think you can do this by yourself. He lets Hiccup go and do it. And then just to kind of conclude this relationship, one of my other favorite things that happen is, you know, there is this, I'm not going to lie, when I first saw this, I thought Hiccup or Toothless might die, mm-hmm. so they're fighting the big dragon or whatever, but they can't get away from the flames and they get knocked out a little bit. Hiccup falls off, but Toothless, like, ends up wrapping him up in him. And Stoic, you know, walks over to Toothless and they think Hiccup's gone, but then it's really cute. You know, Toothless opens his wings and Hiccup's alive. But I just love when Stoic touches Toothless and says, thank you. And it's like, oh my gosh. And then Goober comes, or Gobber comes in. He's like, yeah, you saved one son, but you ate all the other ones. I guess, like, Stoic had other sons, the dragon's gone or something.
One of the things that strikes me in that moment is the weight of this movie and the way that they can convey that through the animation. So this is the animation mixtape. When Stoic believes Hiccup is dead, and the weight that you see on him and the way that he slumps to the floor, I mean, I feel like I'm watching a real person in that in that instance. Yeah. And I think we see it, we have a similar incident later on. I don't know if you want to talk about it now or not, but the after effects of that, of the dragon attack.
Let's talk about it now, because this is important.
As you were saying, Marcy, there are brilliant, brilliant, brilliant action sequences in this film. So good action sequences. And the final one with the main dragon that was in the nest is excellent. But it comes down to Toothless and Hiccup riding together to try and defeat this dragon. And there's a big fall again, like when they were out on their test drive, like the score said. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what happens until we see that Toothless is cradling Hiccup. And we see he's alive, but then it cuts to Hiccup waking up in his bed. And what do we see, Marcy? What do we see?
So Hiccup, I think it's his left leg. He's lost at least his foot. I don't know how far up it goes, but he's lost a piece of his leg and his foot. So he's kind of like Toothless, where Toothless is missing a piece of his back wing a little bit. And I really love that. When he first gets out of bed and I don't know if he knew it had happened, because he seems not like he's not super shocked by it, but he's like kind of like, I don't know what the right word is, but he's definitely feeling something when he looks down.
I guess he lives in a world and a culture where amputation is not uncommon. You know, I suppose. And I think like he has lots of people around him who have lost a limb. So he wakes up, looks and takes the covers off, and he sees he's not got a foot or a leg. And the first time I watched that, I was like, what are you doing? How are you putting this in this film? And I was like, tears were falling down my face, but not just because of because it happens. The way they let it breathe and the way that the film will just focus on him in that moment coming to terms with what has happened. And it's like, I don't know, 15 seconds, 20 seconds. It's not a joke and it's real. And he's, you know, he takes a big breath and he takes a few big breaths and then he tries to stand up and walk. And it's a huge deal. And that emotional impact on him of having lost part of himself is felt, and it counts. It's a consequence. Yeah.
And then I think, like, officially his bond with Toothless is completely sealed at that point, because he, you know, helped Toothless fly again. But when he's stumbling to take those first couple steps, it's Toothless that helps him.
Beautiful.
And it's like, oh God, here we go.
Beautiful.
And I love that so much. I think this is one of the most shocked feelings I've ever had watching a movie, because that doesn't happen in kids' movies. Maybe in Princess Mononoke, where people are losing arms, but as we discussed, that's more of an adult mm-hmm. movie. This is a kids' movie. This really, like, I think it is for everybody, but this is genuinely a children's movie. And to see that, I just was like, mm-hmm. Did he really lose his leg? Is that a real thing? And I was just so shocked. But that is what I mean by the low and no expectations. I mean, I didn't know there could be so much emotion in a movie like this made from a studio that, no offense, I know there's a lot of people that like their movies, but they don't do this with their movies. Yeah,
their movies are fine, aren't they? They're good. Like, you sit down I sit down with Bets and we watch Kung Fu Panda. We enjoy that, you know? We genuinely have a good time. We have a good time and we watch those films. This is beyond a good time. This feels like a moment of magic that they've managed to capture. Mm-hmm. And how many smart choices did they make in this film? How many times did they make the correct decision? I really feel like they've captured lightning in a bottle. And because of that's what's allowed this to become such a successful franchise, was because of how just encapsulating, endearing, all these kind of adjectives this film is. We wouldn't get all these Netflix films and three movies and all these different things, Netflix series, if this wasn't like this, I don't think.
And I just read this today. I did not know this. So he is not the official cinematographer on this, but they actually had Roger Deakins, who is probably the best known, biggest cinematographer at all of film right now. He came in and helped make what they said was the goal was to, he came in to help make it feel like a feature film, not just like an animated movie. And I think you can see a lot of that.
I think the impact that he had was on the way that they created the lighting for different scenes, and the way that things feel. I mean, it's very cartoony in its character designs. You know, you're not going to look at Hiccup or Astrid and think they're real people. But yet when you see everything all together, you see Burke, you see the way the sun falls down on the grass, you see the way that the light hits different axes, even, for example, that looks real, that looks genuine. And so that was money well spent, whatever it cost them to do that. And they and if we're going to be cynical about it, this film made absolute boatload of money. So I think it made $500 million or something. And just think, and so that brings me back to, like, why are we not talking a little bit more about how much of a masterpiece it is? Because lots of people saw it and, you know, and paid money to go and see it, and it's worth your money, and it is so good.
And I think, I know you were talking about, like, there's all this added stuff to it. I've never seen the TV shows. I think the first one is absolutely perfect and my favorite. I've seen all three movies, but I will say this, that the guys that, I'm so sorry, I can't think of their names right now, but the guys that wrote and directed this, the plan always was a trilogy for this story. So a little bit of a spoiler, Kate Blanchett shows up in the second one, and right after, well, when this was nominated for Best Animated Feature and they were at the Oscars, they ran into her and they said, you know, we want to make this a trilogy, and we would really like you to be this character in the second and the third one. And she agreed right then and there. So I think that's a really cool thing, that the power of your first movie got Kate Blanchett to be like, all right,
if Kate's on board, I can do these. I'm on board. That's the bottom line. Well, anything else that you wanted to talk about?
Just, I think the creature design's really cool. I love even just how the people look, like the wise elder woman. I freaking love her. She's really cute. And then the sheep are really comical. I don't want to see them die, but they are really funny, just their facial reactions when, like, a dragon shows up in the beginning. But all the dragons are really distinct and their own thing. Like, no two dragon looks the same. You know what I mean? Each species is its own thing. And then Toothless is just gorgeous. He's a gorgeous cat. And I love him. Actually, one really cool thing I was reading today was they were originally going to make him look like a wolf, And then somebody accidentally put like black leopard print on him, and they were like, oh, that, and that's what his final design is. It's supposed to be like leopard spots. So that all worked out. Good job, everybody. You did it.
Well, I think for me, the only other thing to say is that some of the lines in this, some of the dialogue is spectacular.
Yes, yeah.
Absolutely. When you just think it can't hit you any harder. I think, and Astrid, who we talked about before, who's the badass Viking girl, who initially sort of balks at the idea of Hiccup and Toothless being a thing, but when I say initially balks, and then when she realizes the relationship and she sees the truth, it's great that there's not like a long extended scene of that, but that she comes to terms with it. And she has a kind of a Wall-E moment when she's flying with Toothless and Hiccup and she touches the clouds, which made me think of us, because we've talked about Wall-E in the past. But there's a great conversation between Astrid and Hiccup after all the Vikings go to try and find the Viking nest. And I just love that conversation. It's
Well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, like... that's it, exactly. But I like when she's like going, well, why couldn't you kill the dragon? And he's like, oh, why is it so important to you all of a sudden? She says, because I want to remember what you say right now. Mm-hmm. And it's so good. Yeah. It's so good. That is so good.
Yeah, they're such a good team, too. And I love that it's like, Astrid is... Like you said, as soon as she's on board, she's on board. She, once people start trusting and believing in Hiccup, I love that there isn't like a moment of doubt ever. Like, she wants to go tell everybody about Toothless and the Hive and the big, and he's like, no, because if we tell them, then they're going to kill Toothless because they're not going to understand right away. They just want to go to the main. And then she said, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we won't do it. And then I just love that. I love that because she just trusts him, and she knows he's right, and she wants to protect Toothless too at that point. But I do really love that conversation though, especially like you've already done something stupid. What are you gonna do? And he's like, something crazy. And I like, and the voice acting is just so good, like we were saying earlier, especially those two. But America, like I said, is my favorite as Astrid in this. Oh, and it's fun. Like, I know, just watching their relationship go from movie to movie too, it's really cool, because she's like the girl of his dreams in the beginning, and then just to see how, but they naturally get closer. Like, I like that too. It's not like he has to impress her in one way or another. It's like their friendship forms deeper first, and then they get there. But that's everything I really wanted to say. I just love this movie, and I'm glad you do too.
I just wanted one last thing. Like, you're very good at correcting mistakes that you make. Like, you go, this is a correction from previous episodes. So this is my attempt at a correction corner, okay? So previously, when I watched this film the first time and I went on Letterboxd, I reviewed and rated this film as a 4.5 out of 5. Well, that was a mistake, because this is a 5-star film. Every day, all day, every day long. This is a 5-star movie, and I had the best time watching this last night. And I think part of it the first time is like, you can't believe how good this film actually was. But it is that good. And I think anybody, if you've not seen this, this is something that needs to be watched right now.
Yeah. And it's one of the rare times too where I think I actually enjoy it the more times I watch it too.
There we go. What a great pick we did.
I was just so happy to, like I said, like, life is crazy right now, but it's like, we get to watch How to Train Your Dragon today, Mochi. We get to have a good hour and a half.
Right, well, do you have a song paired?
Oh yeah, I do. I actually am excited. It took me a little bit to find it, but then when I was listening to it, I was like, oh, yeah, I think this is it. So my song is called Big Bear Mountain by a band called Junior Junior. They are formerly known as Dale Earnhardt Junior Junior, which they got, which is a race car driver over here. And he asked them to change their name like years ago. So now they're just Junior Junior. But this song is just, the lyrics remind me of this. It's just like, I hope that up here on Big Bear Mountain, they remember us. That's like the main gist of it. You'll have to listen to it. I think when you listen to it and read the lyrics, you'll see like why I connected to this movie. But that's my
song. Look forward to listening to it. Part of what we do on the movie mixtape, it really is to kind of share things that we like with each other. And so for this song, I have absolutely manufactured a way to share one of my favorite bands with Marcy. So you know I like this band. They're called Wolf Alice. Wolf Alice are a UK band, and I think they're maybe my favorite UK-based band. They've done three albums, and if you don't know them in the US, they are consistently brilliant with all of their albums. But they one of their very early songs is a song called Bros, and it's about the lead singer's best friend. And I felt like I wanted to pick a song that was about friendship, and because I think friendship is integral to this film, right? Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's a film about friendship. Yeah. And so I went hard and fast and picked my favorite song about friendship, which is Wolf Alice and Bros.
Oh, I love it. That's a good pick for sure. Oh, we did it. We had another good week of song picking. We
absolutely did it. Right, well, if your favorite How to Train Your Dragon film is actually The Hidden World, number 3, then why don't you write into us at themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. If you like pictures, especially Mikey P's episode designs, why don't you follow us on Instagram at @_moviemixtape. In fact, by the time when we're recording this, Marcy, we haven't seen his Mikey P's art for this, have we? Or have you seen it?
Oh, no, I haven't. Oh, God, wouldn't that have been funny if I just pretended?
Yeah, I thought you were going to pretend like you did then. But no, we haven't seen it yet. No. But I can't wait to see it. But we have a lot of fun on the Instagram. But there we go. We do have a voicemail.
Oh, we do? Oh, man. I'm not sure.
Well, shall I play it for us? Do you want to hear it? So here we go. Here is a voicemail.
Hi, Marcy. Hi, Dad. How are you going? Are you all right? Okay, let's start with the movie. I think that it was exciting and adventurous with lots of dragons, and they find out that dragons aren't really harmful, but what they learned is harmful to them. So they, at the end of the movie, when the person woke up at the end, he found out that everyone had all his dragons, and I don't know, and I can't believe it. I don't know how long he was asleep for, but I really love the action bit where the dragon accidentally dropped him and he falls into the lava. He almost died, but he was saved by his own dragon. But now he is alive, but his foot was sadly cut off. And now he has to work with a stud, and now he has to learn how to do that. And a girl called Astrid, when she finds out, she kept on hurting him because she thinks that she thinks she's annoyed at him. She has a sword, and then when he's down, she literally just drops it on him. It's so exciting and it's really good. And then she also kisses him without even asking him. It's just like so romantic, but also so action and so that. See ya, bye.
Oh my God.
So there we go.
That was so cute. It made me cry.
So that caller was my daughter, Betsy. And we absolutely love How to Train a Dragon. And so that was her first voicemail into the show.
Wow. Betsy, please keep leaving voicemails. They prefer movies you can watch.
I love that she points out that Astrid kissed Hiccup without even asking. We're very big on consent in this house. It's a big issue. And I'm glad that stuck because she pointed that out. But then she also felt it was romantic. So I'm not sure how those two ideals match up with each other. Wow. Yeah.
Please tell her I said thank you. That made my night. That just made me so happy as soon as that started.
Well, thank you, Betsy. And thank you for calling me Dad.
Thank you, Betsy.
And not my real name, because that's not the name I use on this podcast.
Oh my goodness, listen,
you could maybe be in the cool gang with my daughter and writing us an email to themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com or a voicemail. But Marcy Dale, what are we doing next week?
Oh, wow. So next week, also, if you want to write in, if you want to get mad at the people who kind of really started everything for me, you can next week. So Ty and Danny are good friends from the podcast Rankings, where I kind of got my podcast going. I guess, like, my recording going. I don't know. Like, my first podcast was on this show called Rankings. I'm so sorry. And that's all their fault. They really got my interest in this. Or you could say, bravo, well done, guys. So you can write in and yell at them if you want to, or say good job. But they will be here next week. I am so excited to have them here and finally have them on our show. And we wanted them to pick a movie, an animated movie that they both really love. So we are watching Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse next week. Yes.
Yes, we are. It's just a leap of faith, Marcy.
You want to talk about crying watching an anime?
So yeah, so next week we're going to have Ty and Danny on from the awesome podcast, The Rank Kings. And they're going to be joining us for our special friends episode of the movie mixtape of the animated mix, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, excellent pick. This will be a lot of fun. I'm very much looking forward to talking about it with
I think the good news is everybody in the world loves this film, so we're all proper hyped for it.
Yeah, very excited for it. So another Marvel movie.
Kind of, yeah. Right, well, there we go. So I'll see you next week. Well, I'm Marcy.
Yes, I will see you next week with Ty and Danny, and goodbye for now.
Dun, dun, dun. We're dead.
Suck on that, you sucker.
Tape is a podcast hosted by Dirk and Marcy, mixed and edited by me. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Find us on Instagram at @the_moviemixtape and catch new episodes on Wednesdays. Thanks for listening. Bye!